Want to immerse yourself in sport and the stories of athletes from across the Pacific? Well, join me, Sam Wykes, alongside some of the most talented journalists and sports commentators from across the region for Fresh Off the Field. Each week, we'll also bring you interviews with Pacific athletes leaving their mark on the international stage and those aspiring to do the same. From cricket to netball, athletics to football, and everything in between. Listen to Fresh Off the Field on your favourite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinirao Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Ta'alofa to everyone listening across the Pacific, and welcome to Nijan Footy, the number one place where you will get the best Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union world. My name is Tinirao Arona, and alongside me each week is Sammy Wykes, my koi.
Yo, yo, yo.
Sammy, a.k.a. DJ. Apparently, you've got something special for me at the end of the show.
I do, my friend. Hang around for that one. But we do have a big show, my friend. Round one is officially wrapped up, so you're going to dissect that one. We've also got Super Rugby Pacific results. and some Six Nations results as well. So hang around for that one. Some special news there.
Plenty of Nijan players.
Absolutely.
Playing in those Six Nations.
Over in the UK. And our guest, man. What a story this one is, T, and you've got a close connection with our guest that's going to be on today.
Yes, so our guest, Mose Masoe, he is used to play for the Sydney Roosters and also the Penrith Panthers before heading over to the UK. I was fortunate enough to play at the Roosters with Big Mose, and he took me under his wing, even though we're the same age. But he was born in Wellington, also Samoan background, represented the Tor Samoa. And unfortunately, when he went to the UK, he got a spinal injury. Now, this interview we done last week, and we've saved a big portion of our show for Mose Masoe today. And what he shares is his story and his journey throughout, the injury, what was going through his mind, how he got through that period. And it's just such a special chat with such a great human. That we didn't want to shorten our interview today. I walked away thinking.
I walked away with a lot of gratitude.
A lot of gratitude.
Yeah.
That was the key word.
And I walked away with thinking he's an inspiration to so many people out there. And I was very humbled to be in this space with you because you played with him and you were over there at the time with him to be able to hear his story and just walk away with it with full of gratitude and just, oh man, my heart goes out to him.
Yeah, Big Moss. So stay tuned for our interview with Big Moss, Mose Masoe, here on Nijan Footy.
Moment of the week.
Yeah, to your thoughts, we should start our moment of the week recognising some of the beautiful women in our lives, in the world, because it was International Women's Day yesterday, the 8th of March. Was it yesterday, Sunday? It was Sunday, the 8th of March. I don't even know what day of the week it is, but the 8th
of March.
Yes, and it's a day where we celebrate, for equality, liberation, and making sure that we recognise some of the women that have really broke some barriers and created a legacy so the generations that come through might have it a little bit easier for them to get into some of those spaces. So I just thought, with some of the talent that we've had on our show, some of the female talent that we've had on our show. So we've got, who have we had? Kiana Takarangi.
Yasmin Clydesdale.
Yasmin Clydesdale.
Sala Tongatuki.
Shalom Saoso.
Aneta Claudia Noasala.
Of course.
Mele Hufanga.
And when you hear those stories, man, the
Samaima Taufa,
like they all talk about being pioneers in this game, in the space. So there's people like Shalom can come through because of the fact that, say, Samaima Taufa set the trend for them. And I just thought, T, for yourself, who's someone special in your life that has had an impact on where you are today?
Woman,
yeah.
Obviously, my mum's at the top of that list. I grew up in the dressing sheds. She was a rugby union player. Dad was a touch player. But this special shout-out on International Women's Day, I'm going to give to my auntie, Mata Piho. Now, the reason why my auntie Mata is so special to me and my family, I remember when I was a kid, I was born in Dunedin, south of New Zealand. Back in the 90s, we used to wake up and watch all the All Blacks games. You know, it was a dream of every kid's to represent the All Blacks. And I remember in 1999, we had to wake up very early to watch the Black Ferns because my auntie Mata Piho was playing and representing New Zealand for the Black Ferns. And I believe this game was in Japan. Now, I remember sitting there on the floor. This is when you had those big box TVs, you know, the ones with the little swivel on the top where you had to change the channel. You also had to get the aerial, the wire aerial, and try and get in the right place to get a good picture. But to see my Auntie Mata represent her nation in front of our family who was watching across the shores, and it inspired me and myself, you know, all my family members. And along from that moment, I believe she inspired us to achieve greatness in, you know, our sporting adventures as well. But I just looked on the Black Ferns website and she has a comment here from an interview she'd done. And it says, "I see rugby as a vehicle that empowers women, providing them a platform of strength and provides them effective tools they can use both on and off the field. Some of the disciplines I learned through rugby, I was able to apply to my life. It becomes embedded into your life." So big shout out to my Auntie Mata. Wherever you're listening, much love and thank you for being an inspiration.
Hi, I'm Yasmin Clydesdale and you're listening to Nation Footy.
All right, T, here we go. We're going to go straight into the NRL round one. Some big games. Who are the contenders, pretenders?
Nah, too early to say, mate.
I'm glad you said that.
Too early.
I'm sick of the same commentary from everyone else. Like, oh, mate, you've got to ride him off right now.
Nah.
Matt just training the Broncos too hard.
We'll get through the game.
Same narrative.
After Thursday night game with the Storm versus the Eels, we had five games to wrap us up for round one. So my first one, the Warriors versus the Sydney Roosters. I didn't see this one coming. 42-18.
I did a few.
Yes, you too. If you were listening last Friday.
If you're listening Friday.
Sammy Smokey was the Warriors. I thought their halves pairing Tanner Boyd and Samoan Chanel Harris-Tavita were outstanding. You could see the Warriors' energy. They were also not playing. They're playing without Mitch Barnett and Luke Metcalf. But to come up against a solid Roosters team and put on that performance, score 42 points. Geez, what an achievement for round one.
I didn't think it would be a hiding like that. Did Spencer get injured in the warm-up?
Yeah, he was carrying a hammy injury. Solesi Fiketi, he jumped in as well.
Yep.
Got some minutes on the field towards the back end.
Do you think,
the game.
Was that a bit of a disruption? Someone like their enforcer when you know that he's no longer playing?
I think for the Roosters and for all Roosters fans, just think back to 2013. You know, they had the all-star roster of James Maloney, Michael Jennings, Sonny Bill Williams. He was the big one. And they thought, we're going to win the comp from round one all the way to the end. We lost round one against South Sydney Rabbitohs and ended up winning the competition. So it will take some time for the Roosters to understand each other's roles,
yeah,
how they best get the best out of each other with the new halves pairing with Daly Cherry Evans as well. So don't write them off too early, but great work to the Warriors. Panthers versus the Broncos up in Brisbane. The Panthers 26-0. Defeating the defending champs, Sammy. When you look at the Broncos so far this year, you know, they've gone over to UK, lost that game to Hull KR, the World Club Challenge, open up this round 26-0. What are your thoughts?
Obviously, optics. It looks like it's doomsday, but I think that narrative of around, you know, that you're going to write them off straight away, this whole thing around their head coach, Maguire, training them too hard, man, it's NRL, like the game is that fast and hard and physical. You have to train hard. Everyone's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it was concerning that they didn't score points because we know what they're capable of, especially around the comeback Kings. But I would say that I wouldn't be concerned at all. Like, yes, they lost the club challenge. They went over to England. They came back. Their preparation's shorter than everyone because they went the distance.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll get a better gauge on them come, what, round six?
Mid-season.
Yeah. No concerns here.
6-7, eh?
6-7. Don't you start with that.
But again, the Panthers, I guess it just shows how good they are to hold a team, the defending champs, to nil. I think they are the running favourites to win this competition. The Sharks versus the Titans. The Sharkies winning this one 50 points to 10. I thought the Sharks' halves were great. And Braden Trindle, he was one of the best or the best on ground alongside Nico Hines. But two Tongan boys that led from the front. Big Adam Fanua Blake, he had 18 carries for 200 metres. And then the fisherman, the Tonga fisherman, Sione Katoa, 21 carries, 9 tackle breaks, and 1 try. Guess what his try celebration was?
Was he doing the fishing rod?
He put the fishing line out there. He
casted it.
And he got a big marlin, the Tongan winger. But yeah, great work to the Sharks, a great start.
T, when I think about Shark Park,
mm-hmm.
it cops a lot of stick around, you know, oh, it hasn't got enough seats there to hold semi-final footy or whatever. But it seems like a very tough place to win a game of footy. Like, how hard is it to win a game there?
Well, you think of the facilities across the NRL. Sharks have got to be one of the ones at the bottom end, if not the bottom.
Is it the Wakey of the NRL?
It's the Wakefield of the NRL. But speaking to those players, the Sharks players, they use that. They own that. They own that ground. They know, they understand, yeah, it's not the best, but it's ours. And they know before the game even kicks off, they've got an edge on their team, because when you rock up to that stadium, it's surrounded by buildings. There's not, the dressing sheds aren't the greatest. You'll be lucky to get the bus parked somewhere, because there is no
parking. There's no parking, and they park right at the front. So the boys have to, or in the girls, but they have to walk through the whole crowd.
Through the crowd. And then you get out there and you're just thinking, what are we doing here? It's either cold, it's windy, it's raining. You have to be on top of your game when you go to Shark Park to play the Cronulla Sharks. And the Raiders versus the Sea Eagles. Did you know that this is the first time that we've had two golden point games in round one ever?
Didn't know. That's a great fun fact. That.
It was 28 all at the final whistle. And then first set of the golden point, Raiders go down there. Ethan Sanders, the new halfback, gets the ball and then kicks the field goal to win the game, 29-28. Raiders get off to a good start.
Yeah, you know, with some of these games, and it's probably a broader question, the six again rule around mm-hmm. the restarts, is this having a big impact on these games around possession, completion rate, fatigue? Like, is it too lopsided? Or are you happy with where the game's at?
I think it takes a lot of, if you concede too many penalties or too many six against, some of those 5-6 tackle sets turn into 12 plus sets. Yeah. You do too many of them, you do two or three of them, you're pretty much fatigued, your team's fatigued, and then it just has that knock-on effect. Look back at the Storm versus Eels. There was a few times earlier in that game where the Eels just had to do repeat sets coming with a Storm coming out of their own end. From that comes fatigue. Then Harry Grant just picked them apart. Picked
some
those
of those
apart.
Were on the fourth tackle as well. So yeah. You just so you happy with the rules?
Give us a couple more weeks.
Yeah, fair enough.
And then the last game, the Bunnies beat the Dolphins 40-30. Wasn't a great weekend for Queensland teams, with the Dolphins, Gold Coast, Brisbane and the Cowboys all losing round one. But the Bunnies, geez, they did surprise me. I did like the way that they played their footy. Keon Kolomatangi, 25 carries, 253 metres and 93 post-contact metres. So that means after contact, he's driven his legs almost the length of the field. David Fifita, looking very fit. Big season ahead of him. And then Alex Johnston. He is one try away from evening the record.
Trell Mitt, is he given that pass?
Nah.
A little gift?
Nah,
you don't reckon?
You don't get gifted tries in the NRL.
Oh,
no,
please.
Come on now.
Mate, if that's me, if I'm as I love Trell Mitt, don't get me wrong, but if that's me, I'm giving a little pass. There you go, Alex, just to equal it up, and we'll celebrate next week.
I'm happy he didn't, because it's two man overlap. Latrell scores the try. Could have easily given it to AJ to score to even the record. And then they play the Sydney Roosters at Sydney Roosters this weekend, Friday night, where Alex Johnson just needed to score one try to break the record. Now he has to score two. He mentioned
this is
going to
be
as well. He would love to do it.
That's going to be the match of the round. Ah, how good. I'm looking forward to that one.
But great footy over the weekend, and you'll hear more about our preview on Nijin Footy Friday. Sammy?
Great work. We're going to shift over now to rugby union. And if you've just joined us, Tinodao Arona, Nizam 40. He's just wrapped up the NRL round one news. And now we're going to go into Super Rugby and Six Nation news. The draw had the bye, so that was sweet as. So we'll just cover Moana Pacifica, 57 points to 24, the Chiefs over Moana Pacifica. And
you've seen this one coming.
Yeah, I did see this one coming. It's just been a tough one for Moana. And the Chiefs just had one of those games where it was like a dream start. You know those training runs where all your plays come off?
Yep.
That's exactly what happened.
Was
in that
Moana
game.
Fatigued on the back foot because of the start?
Well, they were rattled. It's just, yeah, it's a good point because the Chiefs were just playing on top of Moana. They got lightning quick ball. Their forwards did an outstanding job of winning the game line. Support players cleaning out, keeping the ball on a platter for their nine just to move the ball. And what the Chiefs did really well and what I love from the Chiefs is their work rate off the ball. Like, what we spoke about with Suoli'i last week, you know, he's around his positioning, how you can link and work off the ball. Man, you should have seen, honestly, like their centre pairing of Quinton Tupaia and Lalakai Forgetti. One edge, they're cleaning out together. And then after that breakdown, they are sprinting pretty much, honestly, 70 metres to get to the other side.
To be in shape.
And they're receiving the ball. And that's where the opportunities came for them to score a lot of points.
So they cleaned out and then sprint to the other side of the field
and got there
to get in shape so that they're an option once the ball comes.
So they, and it's not just those guys. Now we're seeing back rowers almost going to be that link 12 and 13. So I feel like that's where the next movement for rugby union will be, is we're going to see more forwards that are going to be playing in the back line during general play. So that's where some of the tries will be scored. And I want to highlight a Tongan player from the Chiefs, Lalakai Forgetti. He's played for the Wallabies. He's been at the Waratahs. He's now gone to the Chiefs because he has Tongan Māori heritage. Honestly, I've always thought he hadn't hit his potential yet. He was always in and around when he played for the Wallabies, but since joining the Chiefs, he's unlocked something special here.
Can he play for the All Blacks?
Or he's eligible in August to either play for Tonga or the All Blacks.
Is he in All Blacks form?
After that game, again, it's hard to tell.
Has there been any players that played both Wallaby?
Yeah, there's Wallabies and All Blacks. I can't remember his name. There's a guy from the Reds at the moment.
At the moment,
he's played for the All Blacks first, so you can do that. But Lalakai, man, if he keeps his form up, he could be a smoky for them because, as well, do you know who chose him when he was playing for the Wallabies?
Totai Kefu.
No, he never coached the Wallabies.
Oh, he would have been a surrounding.
No.
Eddie Jones?
No. Who's got the All Blacks?
Jamie Joseph.
No. I'm rattling here. You know, you're Cook Island. Cowie, he's put rugby in you on the map.
Dave Rennie, come on now.
Dave Rennie, man.
I was only joking. Nah. Sorry, Jamie Joseph. Well, let's edit that part out.
Nah, it's staying in there. Now, Dave Rennie, he's the one that chose Lalakai, you know, when he was playing for the Wallabies. So I think with him going into the All Blacks, he'll be keeping a close eye on what Lalakai is doing there at 13. So smoky for the All Blacks or Tonga.
There you go.
There were some standouts for Moana Pacifica. I thought Semisi Tupoutailoa, their big number eight, he's scoring tries like it's the under eights again, off the back of the scrum. Get off me. Probably Glenn Vahu, the fullback, he was running around like he had spiders on him, but it just wasn't enough for Moana. And if they can just focus on one thing, it will be defense. They're averaging 42.5 points per game on average.
After four rounds,
28 missed tackles per game averaging.
And in rugby union, the marker of like you don't want to concede this many points, otherwise you're a strong chance of not.
I knew you were going to ask this question. So last time I remember, I think it was a couple of years ago, I gave that stat and then you asked me, oh, what's the marker? And I had no idea. So this time I came prepared off this year. But you do actually want to try and keep it under 20 points.
Under 20
is good. But in terms of average missed tackles, if you're thinking Moana is 28 at the moment, the Reds are at the top and they've only played three, but they're only missing 16 tackles per game. So their completion rate is about 91%.
For all our math listeners.
Don't hold me to that.
Let us know how you go with those numbers.
So there you go. So that's it for Moana Pacifica. Hopefully they can turn things around, but they've got a lot of soul searching to do. And we'll move over to the Tars Hurricanes. They put on a clinic, 59 points to 19. And Joseph Suoli'i, hammy in the warm-up. Looks like he's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks with his
hamstring.
That's a big hammy. But he's got a guru in his corner. Magic touch with his hands. So hopefully he can do the job there.
Is he Tongan?
Nah. If it was a Tongan doctor, he'd be out for probably 14 to 18 weeks. He'd be missing the season. But the Brumbies, they lost on the bell against the Reds, but they still stay on top of the table. So after 4 weeks, with the Brumbies on top, the Chiefs come in second, Hurricanes third, Blues fourth, and for our Pacific Island men, Moana sit at the bottom, and the Drua are 10th. And I am going to shift over to the Six Nations. History was made with Italy as well. The reason why that's significant, they beat England for the very first time in history, 23 points to 18. And Samoan winger Monti Ioane, nephew of Digby Ioane, was playing on the wing for Italy. So he had a strong hand in that game.
They're strong now, Italy.
Mate, they're coming through. They've had a really good under-20s period. So now, the last few years, that lot is coming.
Preparing for next year's World Cup.
It's going to be a tight one, man. This is unreal. Love it. And then Scotland had a huge win over France, 50 to 40. Scotland skipper, Sione Tuipulotu, he has been on fire. He is a ball player. He is a genuine triple threat. Because of his ability to break the line, you have to defend him. But he's digging deep in there, and then he's whipping it out the back. He's just creating numbers on the edge because people are holding on him. But they have the opportunity, Scotland, to go against Ireland next week and become Six Nations champions if they win that one. Big events happening in the world of rugby union.
Now, big events, and now we go on to our big guest.
Let's go.
The one and only Mose Masoe.
Hi, my name is Faith Nathan, and I'm listening to Nesian Footy.
Well, today I'm honoured and blessed to have a good friend of mine on our show, Nesian Footy. His name is Mose Masoe. We got to play together at the Sydney Roosters. He was born in Wellington, but he represented the Tour Samoa on 7 occasions. He played at the Roosters, he played at the Panthers before heading over to the UK and playing in the Super League. And he was one of the biggest on the field every time he took that field. His name is Mose Masoe, and I'd like to welcome him here on Nesian Footy. Welcome. Thank you for joining us, Big Moss.
Thank you, boys, man. Thanks for having me on today, man.
No, it is great to have you, man. I really enjoyed watching you when you were at the Roosters. You were the enforcer, and I would have hated to have been in front of you when you were playing. But T did mention that you've played together. I've had mixed reviews when we've had some of T's ex-teammates on. What was he like as a player? But more so, as a bloke, you know, does he shout? Has he got those T-Rex arms that don't go to his wallet? Like, what was he like?
Oi, this interview is about Moss, not me.
Yeah, no, just the first one, just to get it out there.
You know what? I've never seen T's wallet. all jokes aside, no, he's a great bloke, man. Honestly, that's why we all got along at the Roosters. We were the Reggies. We used to be called the Reggies. So we were like, just in and out of first grade, one of us boys will get a shot and we'll be like stoked for them. I still get a buzz about that. Good group of boys there at the Roosters. It was a good time.
I keep forgetting that there was like me, Moss, Lama, Daniel Tupou, and well, the three of us were all competing for the same spot to play NRL. And you find out on Tuesday if you made the team list. And if you didn't, you're playing Newtown. So it was either two of us were playing Newtown and one would be playing for the Roosters. But
wow, man, how cool, man. Special time. Good bonds there, eh?
Oh, those training sessions were pretty tough as well. but let's get back to where were you born? You know, what was your upbringing like?
Man, I was born in Wellington. So I'm from a place called Nainai. And so it's like the Mount Drua of Lower Hutt from where I'm from.
So it's the home of the brave.
land of the free.
Yeah, 100%. And oh man, I absolutely loved growing up. I knew like nothing different looking back now, but man, it was such a cool place to grow up. But man, I started playing footy late. My parents, they're straight from the islands, so they like go to school, footy's never gonna get you anywhere. And I think they just didn't want to take me to the hospital because I used to get bloody noses all the time. And they let me play hockey. So I was like, I used to play hockey, like grass hockey. Yeah, and I wanted to be like Black Sticks, man, play for New Zealand. That was my dream at like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But I played all the way up till I finished school. Even when I signed at Roosters, I was still playing with the bros from school. Yeah, I only started playing when I was like 13. One of the bros took me down to Randwick. So I'm a Randwick Kingfisher. Yeah, I started there and then started making a couple of rep teams and stuff. And because I was new to rugby league or new to any kind of contact sport, they're like, oh, who's this kid? And then I didn't think anything of it, and then got picked up for like under 16s and under 18s for New Zealand. And everyone in those teams were all signed except two guys. It was only me. And you remember a player called Alejandro Mara? I played for the for the Warriors. And so it was only him and I that were signed to any like NRL clubs. And then, yeah, ended up at the Roosters. Yeah.
Man, that would have been, you would have been the first person I've ever heard of saying that you were dreaming to play grass hockey. Out of all of our guests, yeah. Pacific Islands, your family, cousin.
It's got to be around the time where Mighty Ducks must have just came out.
It has to be something. but you know,
you're the Samoan Goldberg.
yeah, that's it. That was me.
I keep forgetting that you're actually, you had an accountant background. And I remember when I met Moss at the Roosters, he always like knew numbers and knew about the, you know, how we got paid. How accountants
knew the tax brackets. Hey, you're going to move into this bracket, so you're going to pay 45% tax.
He would talk to me about stocks, and he was like 20. He would go, oh, because this is, you know, the oil's up here, so this will drop down here, and this is like global. I forgot all about that.
Oh, man, how good. How good.
It was so funny because when I was at school, because my parents pushed school, man, they were like, you know, you can only get somewhere, you got to go get a degree, do this. And I was like, oh, yeah. So all my friends, if you look at my set of friends at school, I had like three Indian mates and two Chinese friends, and we were all like geeks. I was the captain of our first 15 team, and I won't hang out with the boys. I'll be like, oh, stuff you boys. I'd hang out with my mates, man. And I grew up through school with them, and they actually helped me with all my schooling, man. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have passed like year 12. And like, I got a scholarship through, it was called First Foundation, to go to uni. But then I chose to go NRL, so I was like, I had to leave that behind.
Just on that, before we move on, that part of having been book smart at school, I'm thinking when we came through, it's almost like you never wanted to try at school because you'd probably be like, oh, man, they're going to think I'm Fio Poco or Fio Poto or whatever. You know what I mean? And you try and dumb yourself down and just blend in. Like, how was that for you?
Oh, it was different, but, man, I was just too scared to get in trouble for my parents to not get an A in class. I still remember my dad was like, what is this? Why is that a B? I told you to go to class to get an A. I don't take you to school. Oh, man, my dad, he was like so strict. And that was probably what got me through school. I was like, sport was like second for fun. But I had to hit those A's and stuff like that because my parents had never seen other kids from our area progress in sport. So they've never seen it with their own eyes. They've seen other Pacific Islander people make it, like doctors and stuff. So that's how they visualize their kids are making it. So they've never really seen kids from, especially Nainai, go and play sport and get paid for it.
You mentioned you went to the Sydney Roosters in 2010. You make your NRL debut. Now, a young kid from Nainai, you know, what was your feeling? What was it like when you did finally make your NRL debut?
At the time, I signed at the Roosters straight out of school. So end of 2007, like I finished school on the Friday and I flew in on the Sunday. And the only reason I really signed at the Roosters is because like I found out my girlfriend at the time was pregnant. And I was like, how am I going to support this kid? And then they sent me this contract and I was like, holy, this is more than my parents get paid. So like,
oh, numbers were good. Numbers were good.
Yeah, the numbers were good. And I was like, oh, okay. So then I was like, oh, I just signed a Roosters. And it was only under 20s too. So I was like, I only signed for 1 year. So I came over. My girlfriend at the time, she ended up having the baby, but I was at preseason. I left on the 4th. She had my oldest son on the 9th of December, but he was due on the 26th. So I was meant to be back for that. I still kind of regret that I missed his birth, but that was just a way for me to provide for him at the time. Mm. You know, it gave me a year of a good pay. And I thought after a year, I could come back to Nainai and just work a job or something like that and do something. So, yeah, ended up signing another year and then, yeah, got a debut.
When I think about some of the other probably prestigious jerseys you've worn, the Samoa one, you know, what was that like to be able to put on that jersey?
It was mixed emotions because I think my second year, Roosters, they added me to a training squad at the Kiwis training squad. And I was like, oh, yeah, that would be cool. But I had to end up getting shoulder surgery, so couldn't really pursue that. And then I was like, I'm in an iron for a few years because the boys were like, oh, play for tour. And I was like, oh. And I had a big talk to my parents, and mum and dad were like wanting me to try pursue the Kiwis jersey. But every time they spoke about home or like Samoa, they get like really emotional. So I could tell it really meant a lot to them. So I was like, oh. Because when 2013 World Cup came up and they said, oh, you're in the Tour Samoa squad, I was like, I was buzzing. For me, it was really emotional to play for Tour. I think I probably cried every time they did the anthem. And it was just awesome because all the support, and it was just a different feeling. It's something that and T would know for playing for the Cook Islands. It's something you can't buy.
I love that. You're definitely right. You can't put a price on representing your nation. So, Moss, you play a handful of NRL games at the Sydney Roosters. You go over to the Penrith Panthers. And then in 2014, you head over to the UK and play in the Super League, representing St. Helens, and then moving over to Hull KR, where you played over 100 Super League games. And then, you know, there was a tragic moment, you know, that probably something that no one expected. You know, I was there watching a game, and I was actually at Wakefield Trinity at the stadium. You're attempting a tackle, and then, you know, you didn't come up from this injury and had to get carried off the field. Could you take us back to that moment and explain to our audience, you know, what exactly ended up happening on the field?
Yeah, I think it was only maybe a minute into the game because we kicked off. Then they got a penalty, so they came down our end. Yeah, and then I just came out of the line. I actually tried to put a shot on, but someone had too good footwork, and then I ended up like just like knocking, going in, but then just hitting my head in the wrong position, and it just, yeah. So it snapped my C4 and my C5 vertebrae, and it's kind of like, I explain to people, is like, you know, you drop your phone 100 times, and then you just drop it that one time, and it just shatters. That's my neck. So I would have attempted that tackle 100 times, that wouldn't have shattered, but maybe that just one time, perfect moment, one in a million, and it just went. So I was on the ground. I actually thought I knocked myself out, and I was like, oh, what an idiot. So I kind of came to, looked to the sideline because I was lying on my side, and I was like, oh, am I knocked out? And then I was like, I'll just close my eyes for a little bit. And then I was like, hey, I can't like move when I opened my eyes. So I said to Wala Hodaki, I said, bro, can you move my leg? Like, can you touch my leg? And then he like kind of grabbed my leg and like pulled it, because I was on an awkward position lying down, and he pulled my leg, and then my leg went over. So it like rolled me over, and I was like, I can't feel anything. Like I can't even move. And then that's when I was a bit shocked. And then I was like, oh, I probably like broke my neck. It hit me. Like I was like, oh, yeah, they got the board and got me on. Into the changing rooms, and T will tell you their changing rooms is tiny. So they laid me on this bed, and then they rushed my partner in, Carissa, and she was just like, what's happening? And I just asked her, oh, just go pinch my leg, like pinch it. And then I was like, are you pinching it? And she's like, oh, I've already pinched it, and I couldn't feel anything. So her and I started crying. Like we had, that was the only time we cried, her and I together. And I was like, oh, I've done it. I've like broken my neck. I kind of knew that I had a spinal cord injury. Got to go to the hospital and see what the goal is. And they had to operate quick, because when you break those two bones, like you got a chance that one of the bones goes through your spinal cord and then it's game over. Like you'll never be able to get that back. But thank God for mine. Mine was like, you know, when you're hosing the grass, and then you can't be bothered to go turn off the tap. And then you just like snap it in half to stop like the water going through. Yeah, that's what's happened to mine. So it's like kinked my spinal cord. So it stopped all the nerves from like the signals going down. So everything from my C4, C5 just had nothing. So yeah, they went and did the surgery, and then I woke up and they just they didn't know if I could walk again or like move again. So it was just they have to relieve the pressure and then see what the goal is. So man, it was a bit scary at the time.
Man, I'm sitting there
with my heart sinking.
Yeah.
Because of the way we play the game, especially you never think that anything like this is going to happen to you or anyone. Because you take it out there, you're full of adrenaline, you're bulletproof. It's every player's worst nightmare. For yourself, man, like when you came out of the hospital or surgery, how did you handle the unknown of not knowing what's going to be happening next?
It was like, I reckon rugby league taught me a lot. And like my upbringing too with my, I have a cousin who's got cerebral palsy. So he cannot walk, cannot talk, is in an electric wheelchair, you know. So that kind of, my mindset was like, well, at least I've got to live my life for 30 years, live my dream, like play footy. I've got kids. And then I've got my cousin here who can't do any of that stuff. So it was more like this gratitude, man. I was just like, I'm still alive. I'm here kicking. So, you know, how can I use this mindset to my advantage? And then also when I went to St. Helens, my goal was to come back to NRL. So we won the comp at St. Helens, got to play for Toro again, and then we came back to St. George. And then I did my ACL at St. George, so I never got a game to play at St. George. But this is where probably I learned my biggest lesson was I started doing stuff, you know, I was drinking too much. I was just in a bad place. And it was easy for me to mask it because I'm that type of person. I was drinking, gambling too much, and doing other things that I shouldn't have been doing. And all it was I had a really bad ACL reconstruction. I couldn't straighten my leg again. And then I missed my chance to play for St. George. So that mindset of mine, just feeling sorry for myself and not being able to fulfill that dream of mine, I wasn't mentally strong. And so I could either pick that route and be the Mossy feel sorry for himself, or pick the other route and go, far, I'm just going to attack this, use all my other lessons that I've learned during footy, positive mindset, giving everything a go. And like, that's what got me all these other contracts and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I picked that route with that kind of mindset of like, let's go, like, I'm going to prove these guys wrong kind of thing, you know? Because you're playing at 125, 30 kilos. Everyone was like, oh, you won't be able to play. I was like, oh, I'll give it a go.
So you were at Wakefield Hospital, and I've shared this story to some close friends of mine. And I remember the first time I came and visited you, you were lying in bed. And I was actually quite surprised of how your mindset at the time, like the end, you just had surgery and you couldn't move your whole body at the time. And I remember the first time I came in, checked in on you, and you go, T, check this out. And you wiggled your big toe. And then you had, and you just had this big smile on your face. And for me, it was like, man, here I am, you know, whinging about the cold, or, you know, whinging about having to go to training, and you're here smiling about you wiggling your toes. So every week it was actually fulfilling for me to come and visit you just to see, you know, how, what your mindset was around your recovery. But I know you also shared some goals with me at the time. Now, Carissa, your wife was pregnant, and you shared to me a couple of goals. Are you open to sharing some of those goals that you set for yourself when you were lying in bed?
Oh, yeah. So, and that was another big thing. Chris had been through her own kind of stuff too. We were trying for our last one for a while. Chris had a couple of miscarriages, and then she had one really bad one where they had to go. She had an ectopic where it got stuck in her fallopian tube. They had to go cut one out. And the week for the game, we found out she was pregnant with our youngest, Louis. So I was like, oh, you know, as much as it was devo for me, man, we've been praying for this baby. We wanted this kid. So I couldn't really put that stress on her as well. Like, it would have been like, she's already been through all of that. So I had to be positive and stuff. And probably my biggest goal was to be able to hold my son, like, when she gave birth. So it was pretty funny when we went in. So when I got out of hospital, it was COVID times, we rang up the hospital and we said to them, can my partner come into the delivery room? Because that time, ladies were giving birth to their kids by themselves. So they weren't allowing the partners in. But thank God the people at Hull like got me in. we both rocked up to the hospital in wheelchairs. Like, it was funny. She was pushing my wheelchair in and she her water just burst. And then we both got pushed down in wheelchairs. It was pretty funny. But I got to hold my son. That was the biggest goal of mine, was just to be able to hold him when he was born. So
this would have been 9 months after the surgery?
6 months, because we didn't want to tell our girls, because she's had miscarriages.
Mm.
Yeah, we were just so stoked he's here with us.
The other thing too is that people won't realize that the time of your injury, it was only... was it like 3 weeks before COVID hit in UK?
Yeah.
About four weeks before COVID. So he has surgery, 4 weeks COVID hit, and then the whole country goes into lockdown. So my weekly visit turns into, sorry, man, I can't even go outside my front door now. And you're stuck, and you've also got two older daughters living with your wife, with Carissa in England, and then you're stuck in hospital during COVID time. With a baby on the way as well. So just to bring it all together. But you know, in regards to support and some of those things that got you through those times of being isolated in the hospital, you know, and still trying to just get your body moving again, what do you think helped you get through those moments?
Man, just all the support in the beginning. I think Sue, God bless her, our manager, she had like a roster for everyone to be in my room at certain times of the day. Like, I would wake up, I'd be like, oh, and then one of the boys was always there. I was like, oh, hey, man. And like all the boys that lived, because a lot of our team lived like in Leeds area. So they'll just be like, I'll feel so sorry for the other people in the ward, because I have like 20 people in my room at a time. Like, and like, it would just be constant. Like, all the boys are coming, they're just laughing. But the good thing about that is, they had other people, patients in there, and they love footy. So, you know, a couple of boys will come in and I'll be like, oh, go say hi to that guy. He's a massive Huddersfield fan. Or go say hi to this guy down there. He goes for Leeds, you know. So it was kind of cool, because I was like, oh, Sully, I've really seen you before. Just go talk to someone down there. So it was kind of really cool. Man, I had so much support for a good 3-4 weeks before the COVID, till they locked everyone out. But in saying that, COVID was a blessing in disguise for me too, because Carissa, she was traveling. It was like an hour's drive every day. And then she got to pick up the kids. So she would come, drop the kids to school, come, spend time with me, go pick up the kids, then come back, and then go back at night. Like, it was like 4 hours of driving, like, every day. So it was kind of good that COVID came in, because then it just kept her at home with the kids and she could relax. And also, like, I just got out of into a wheelchair by then. So I started like really focusing on my rehab. So I took this time to really, you know, like, now I'll be pushing my wheelchair up and down the thing, just annoying all the other patients. Like, gee, get up. Come, let's go to the gym. Let's go to the gym. And like, it was cool. I made a lot of friends like in hospital, because we only had each other. We'll be able to talk about each other's, what everyone's going through. And for me, like, my injury was doing something I loved. A lot of those guys that were in there, it wasn't their fault. You know, it would be like a car crash that someone caused, or someone's like riding their bike and they got hit by a car. So it was like, we'll sit at the dinner table at night in our wheelchairs, and everyone would say to each other, you know, we're kind of like counseling each other, which was cool, talking through all our emotions and what we're going through. I could really resonate with them, you know, go through the injury and stuff. But at the same time, I was like, we can change it ourselves, man. Mm. You can either dwell about it now, and then we just got to move forward. So it's a blessing.
You were talking about some of the community that you had within the hospital next to you, and you're waking up and someone was there. I know T's a big name. He's a big name, and he'd be a great mate to have by his side, but he's just given me three initials that he's put over there, SBW. Was he there with you?
Yeah, because SBW signed with Canada.
Oh, the Toronto team.
Toronto.
The Wolfpack.
He just signed with the Wolfpack. And Toronto, they were based in England for like over the winter because it's like frozen over in Canada. So yeah, he came through and everyone, the whole thing was buzzing. It was cool, man. He came in and for the Toronto Wolfpack, like every team came. In the whole of the Super League, every team came. Like, it was crazy. You know, at training when you want to prove to the boys, oh, I got this, man, kind of thing. Because I had all of them come. I was like, oh, I better get out of this bed and start walking because I got to prove all these boys, like, I got this, man. It was a good motivation for myself to, like, get back to standing up and getting back on my feet. So
Always try.
Sorry, for those who don't know, there's Sonny Bill Williams.
Yeah, I wish I got the same reception by your friends and nurses in the hospital. But anyway, yeah, you would have had a lot of steps throughout your recovery where, you know, from wiggling your toe to then lifting your leg. And I got to experience those earlier ones with you. But when you reflect on that journey, what was that breakthrough moment where you're like, okay, everything's going to be okay?
Man, so for me, the breakthrough was honestly when I could move my wrist. That was the first thing I could move. And I was like, yo, I got this. Like, I was just doing the things in my head, like, all right, if I can move my wrist, then that means the signal is getting down to this area. So then I can move my hands. If I can move my arms, I'm sweet. Like, if I was just in a wheelchair with my arms moving, I was like, oh, yeah, that's all right. You know, like, other guys would come in their wheelchairs. And I was like, man, I just want to be like this guy. You know, like, the paras would come in, you know, like, if I can just push myself out around in a wheelchair, yeah, that's me. But then those guys were telling me, nah, you're going to walk out of here. And I was like, fuck, I didn't know because I'd never been in this situation. But yeah, there's this one old guy, and he's a massive Wakey supporter. He's like, nah, you'll walk out of here. And I always give him crap, but he was right. he's seen it all. I mean, he's seen heaps of people come through, and yeah, thank God for him. You know, as soon as I seen him, I was like, man, at least I can push my wheelchair around. I'll be all right. You know, get a bigger upper body and, you know, and just like push myself around. But yeah, he was the one who said to me, nah, you'll walk out of here.
Man, like, you've got the best outlook on life. Unbelievable. I think of those breakthrough moments. I think of milestones that you can never have in rugby. Even you coming back from an injury, when even from an ACL, oh, yes, I get to jog and all of that type of stuff, but you still have working limbs. Can you just let us know, how did it feel to walk out of there?
It was emotional, but at the same time, I when I first took my first step, man, I cocked it. Like, I put one step forward and I absolutely fell on my face. And the nurses and stuff, they're like, oh, you know, they had to write like an incident report and all this stuff. And I was like, honestly, don't even worry about it, guys. Like, I fall over at training all the time. We get tackled. Like, they forgot that. Like, this is not, it's normal for us to fall over. But I was like, oh, I fall over all the time at training. So it's all right. So this is learning how to, like, when you fall over, just get back up. And the hardest thing for me was getting back up. Like, you know, you had to use all your whole body to try to push yourself up, get on the chair, stand up. But the falling over was, that's probably what helped me get to walking, you know, because I was like, oh, God, I don't want to fall over again. Like, but I've fallen over heaps, man. You know, it's just part of life. You know,
yeah.
That's just like another metaphor, you know. Like, you fall over, you just got to keep going, man.
Yes, sir. It's been six years since that moment. How are you traveling now? How's the body?
It's good. It's good. So I still walk with crutches. Like I was saying just before, if I fall over in public, which I did last week, I got out of the car and tried to be a fiapoko and, you know, I'll walk, try to step up on the step, but my leg wasn't warmed up yet and I cocked it. And it was like 11 o'clock in front of like a Woolies. And at that time, that's where all like the retirees are doing their shopping. So I've got these old ladies coming up to me like, oh, do you need me to pull you up? And I was like, I weigh like 120 kilos. Yeah, man. I was like, don't worry. I'll fall over all the time. I'll make myself up. I'll get myself up. But it was just so nice that all these people were like, oh, willing to help me. Yeah, the body's good. And you know, getting him back into like a bit of work has been awesome.
Man, one last one for me. How's your definition of life changed now since all of this?
Man, probably I put my family first now and everything. The hard work is an Uber driver because it's just so easy to like, and I do like gigs around my kids. So, you know, they've had to see me at my, and get me through my worst, you know, like through my injury and all that stuff. So like just dedicate all my time to them. Chris is like, oh, you should go do a job where, you know, work in the NRL or do something like that. And then I was like, you know what? It's just going to take up a lot of my time for now, especially when my kids are young. As much as it, you know, the injury, it's a blessing in disguise as well, because I get to spend a lot of time with my kids, you know, make sure that they're going down the right path. Don't have to bring out the hockey stick. Yeah. The little one's testing it though. It's been awesome, man. So
love it.
Oh, that's
love
good. It. Hey, Moss, I wish we could, we could sit here and talk forever, but I just want to say a big thank you again for jumping on our show and sharing your story. But appreciate you. Much
thank
love.
You, boys.
And I'm sure we'll cross paths soon.
Yeah, 100%.
Give me three answers for this one.
Is this me, Sammy?
Yes, this is you, my friend.
Okay,
introduce our category
this is
game.
Our game of Give Me Three, where one partner will be asking the other one. Actually, we changed the game, didn't we?
Oh, man, we're week 400 and we still can't get it right.
I just had a mind, but I'm too
busy.
Yeah,
now what is our
about
categories?
Yes.
Where we choose... I don't even know how to explain it. Anyway, it's a great game. Get amongst it. I've got three questions for you this week. You need to give me the three
answers
back.
And I'm on six or the loser.
Oh, six or.
Yeah, loser has to buy the winner a jersey.
Jersey. Okay. Yep. Jersey of your choice. And I've changed it up a bit. I've got away from sport. See, you'll like this one. Give me the...
When did you do it? Did you do it over the weekend? Or?
Yeah, no, last night about 11:30 at night.
Okay.
So... I was all over it. Easy one. And I was just listening to some music and I thought, you know what? I'm going to do a music one for my friend here. And it is, give me the three missing lyrics for these Pacific Island bangers. So I'm going to read you part of the song and you're just going to give me the missing lyric for it.
All right,
lyric,
let's go.
Or lyrics. Okay. This is the first song. You pick me up every morning and I've just been through with the club. I never thought that a girl could love a man this much. I'm overwhelmed and baby, I just can't thank you enough. And I'm wondering.
Oh, Sweet Darling.
Yes, it is Sweet Darling, Fiji.
Okay.
Don't hesitate.
Oh,
give us some.
I was like, what? Where are these lyrics
coming
from?
There we go. That's the chorus. What a banger. Sweet Darling, shout out to Fiji. May you rest in peace, brother. Okay. Here's the second one.
More energy, like.
Okay. Nijan style is here. Ladies, beware. Now tell me if you are down. All the sounds get down.
All the sounds get down. Polynesians all around now.
Now this is how you move your crowd.
Okay.
Yes. Nijan Mystic.
Nijan Mystic.
Yes.
Shout out to Mele Hufanga.
That's what I was thinking of. Exactly who I was thinking of. Okay, last one, two from 2T. And I can see you've got a smile on your face. Are you feeling this type of...
Confident? I listen to all types of music.
Yeah,
so just
okay.
Trying to...
This one, I really wanted to have something that had some Islander lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You will know this one. Screams from the old plantation nonstop.
What?
Screams from the old plantation nonstop.
Foy beer, foy beer.
Squeeze from the old plantation.
What does that? What does that mean?
Foy beer. I've got no idea, but that's King Kapisi. That is King Kapisi T. Three from three. I knew you would like that one.
Right,
I knew
work.
That would bring a smile to your face, and I'm sure all our listeners at home are going to go and download all those songs because that's our time up for today. Tell your footy loving friends about Nijan footy. Mondays and Fridays. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Pacific website.
Ka kite everyone. Have a great week. We'll see you on Friday.
Bye. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.